Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers.
Hey, everybody. This is the Brothers Wiss, number 58. You've got me, the beautiful Greg Soul, down here in Texas. It actually snowed 2 days ago. The first time in my life I've seen actual snow. I mean, I think there was like an inch and a half or something in there. We were out there playing. We made legit snowmen that were like 4.5 feet tall, had a snowball fight. It was pretty insane. I'm sure that's par for the course for you, right, Mikey?
We haven't even gotten, like yesterday was our first like little flurry. Like you couldn't even measure it. It's just like, you know, there's a little bit stuck in the corner is all that we've had so far this year. I posted a few minutes ago on Facebook asking what people wanted to hear about. So far, that's the only response we have got was snow in Texas and Atlanta.
Well, Mikey, Mike Hammett up here in Chicago, I guess. It's going to legit snow. Like in January for you guys? Is that usually when it hits?
I mean, we've had legit snow. I mean, it's probably rare that we haven't had a legit snow by now. Huh. Sometimes we have legit snow in October. But, you know, sometime this month, you know, it's bound to happen sometime in the next, couple weeks or so.
Gotcha. Well, down here in Central Texas, that was entirely abnormal. That's the most snow I've ever seen in my life. So I think I can truthfully say that I have seen snow now and played in it, and my kids have experienced it. We had been talking about planning some kind of winter trip up north so that we could legitimately see snow, but I think maybe I got out of it. I think this is this is a good compromise. We'll see.
It helps the planning, I suppose, if it comes to you instead of you going to it.
There you go. All right, man, you ready to jump in?
Sure. Well, and I suppose to kind of tie the snow into something, how we're related, WISP related. I see in some of the Facebook groups, some of the guys have been talking about some of the outages that they've been having. Internet power, whatever, and how they're getting responses back from their providers saying, the line's broke, the line's down. They don't know where because they haven't gone to look yet because it's bad outside. And there's this much snow. And like, to me, it's like, well, I mean, why aren't you out there fixing it in this, like while that's happening? But it's just such a rarity down there that, even the utilities apparently don't go out and fix their stuff until it's, melted or whatever.
I know this far south for us, as soon as that stuff hits the street, it melts. I mean, it's not gonna stick there. It'll stick in the grass and stay there for a while. But, we ice over probably every other year at least, so it'll stay down around freezing for like 4 or 5 days straight, and then we'll get some rain, and that stuff will ice over, and all the kids will have a great day hanging out at the house. But other than that, it's usually fine for us to drive around here anyway. I guess Georgia's maybe not as temperate.
I think some of the guys were in like Alabama and stuff too, talking about it. But sure, yeah. Let's move on to something. As Greg looks at the list of things I've added, so we've gotten some feedback lately. Some of it was solicited, some of it was not.
Awesome. How was it?
I don't mean to be throwing this guy under the bus at all, because it's genuine feedback, and I feel as though the people aren't going to be receiving it as willfully as I am wishing it to be. So there was some comment made to me about the lack of direction and kind of stammering from this side of the aisle. I think that's
just a clear indication that you've made it. You haven't made it until people hate you, Mike. So you're doing all right.
And I know what happens because, like, I was like a terrible stutterer when I was young, and I, you know, worked to overcome that. And, like, you know, but I didn't bring this up to call the guy out because that's not my intention at all. To, I guess, solicit feedback if anybody else has ideas for me to improve that, because I want to, like, if I'm delivering good content, but it's a bitch to, you know, absorb, and you got an idea on how for me to deliver it better, then I want to deliver better content.
So, yeah, go back in time and make sure that you don't have a stutter. Yeah, I mean, I 100% get that, and most people, Mike, don't know you that well, so they don't realize that you did grow up with a stutter, and you can tell that you pace yourself when you're talking to overcome that, you know. And you know, I wouldn't be mad at you if you only had one leg and you couldn't keep up with me in a race either. You know what I mean? It's like you're doing what you do. Whenever I listen to podcasts and I hear people talking at a slower pace than I care for, I just go boop, 1.5 speed. And that's how I listen to all my technical podcasts. I listen to them moving at a pretty decent clip because I can absorb the information and get through it. You'd be surprised at how fast you get used to that. I don't know. Can you do that in YouTube? Can you just tell it, hey, speed up
the
video?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, that's what I would do then. Literally every technical podcast, I just assume everybody's voice is 2.5 octaves higher, you know, just from talking so quick.
Sure. Yeah, but so, like, if anybody has, whether it's ways for me to, you know, better prepare for the shows or whatever, or even technically, like, you know, because the guy that offered the feedback, I asked him, I was like, do you think we can edit it out? And he's like, no, that's, you know, that doesn't seem editable. But if somebody has ideas on a technical way to help clean that up, Greg's one does all that.
Yeah, I did find a piece of software at one point, and I tried it, and it does like noise gates. So it's basically you know, we are talking, and then there's gaps in between. It'll look for the volume level to drop below a certain level, and then if it's below a certain level for a certain amount of time, it'll chop that out. It kind of would automatically go through and chop, 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 chop. It did take a little tweaking, but I got it to work. And it was okay, I guess. I listened to it, and at a normal pace, it seemed okay. But then I came to the realization that I always just speed everything up. So there's some people who don't want to hear it like that. Because, I mean, it usually sounds fairly okay, but sometimes it does sound a little clipped and odd. But not terribly so, but it was enough to sort of drive me bonkers if I was going to listen to that for an extended period. Because some of our conversations go on for a while.
Yeah, well, and like, you know, I know that I've messed with it a little bit in Camtasia and whatever that open source audio editing program is. I forget what it's called.
Audacity.
But I think where I was going towards wasn't so much like the dead space, but the ums and ahs and, you know, stuff like that, which would be admittedly difficult technically to figure out when someone's umming and ahing versus saying something useful. But if it's out there, it's a lot easier than me talking better. So,
well, that just comes through practice, listening to yourself a lot. I mean, look at Obama. He became president, and there's zero dead space in his conversations because then he'll go, ah, and then he'll continue to, you're right. So it's, you know, he's doing all right with it. They would kind of drive me bananas, but I think it's just through consciously listening to yourself and listening to playbacks of yourself, which nobody likes to hear themselves talk, but
no, I hate hearing myself.
It helps. Learning to pace yourself and having silences is okay. You don't always have to fill them with a noise. I still have problems with that. I know I still a tremendous amount as well. Anyway, complainers. Feedback. I don't call them complainers. It's just feedback, man. I don't care if it's good or bad. I just want to hear anything from people. Just say anything to us.
You know, kind of looping into that, you know, heard people complaining about audio quality, which is, I know, it's, not sure what he's putting a bunch of spaces into. I am looking for people to give feedback on what the audio setups they recommend that I add anyway. You know, some, of course, we've had a wide range, like, you know, I asked on Facebook, and it's a wide range of people from, no, you're fine, to, oh my God, that's terrible. Soliciting feedback on that, because at some point I have to just buy something, because something that's not going to draw in the fans running in my tower over here and me typing and all that stuff.
It'd be good. Feedback on that. I listen to a lot of podcasts. Most of them are professional podcasts, and so they have clean equipment on both sides, and they're not just recording a Skype call like we are. They're actually recording their audio on both ends and then shipping the audio to an editor, and he's putting it all together. So I've gotten very spoiled and biased on that sort of stuff. Technical podcasts, I forgive it, because they have so many disparate people coming in all the time that, you know, you can't always have somebody in a studio or somebody with a decent setup. So you just get used to that. But I don't know. You could always be better. There's always room for improvement.
Sure.
All right. Let's talk about a little bit of gear. What do you reckon?
Sure. We can stop talking about ourselves and talk about...
stop talking about the podcast and actually do the podcast. Let's do that. IgniteNet just debuted some new switches, or it's new to me. I don't know. Maybe they had talked about them before. They're calling them the MeshLink switch. It's a little four-port doojobby.
I'm sure we've got pictures of them up on our Facebook, or on my Facebook, perhaps. Because I've seen it before. It's been at the WISPA shows and things. I got some more details the last IgniteNet interview that we did. But it didn't have, I don't think it had a name then. Now it has a name. I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to, you know, more suit people that are doing kind of what IgniteNet is targeting towards, that, you know, 60 gigahertz type stuff. Not because 60 gig is what's important, but if you have like a large area WISP running, you know, long different direction backhauls, and it's a real complicated thing, you know, this may or may not actually be for you, given that it, you know, there's a lot of other odd stuff happening. But with the, like, the intent is to have multiple high-speed backhauls going, and with 60 gig, you know, it had some pretty rain fade, and so your link may maybe drop on out. Obviously, IgniteNet has the 5 gig backup, but you may elect to not use that to, you know, to preserve your 5 gig. And with this trill, it'll, you know, dynamically aggregate capacity across multiple different directions. You know, I see lots of people trying to do, you know, tricks with OSPF and things like that to kind of aggregate bandwidth at a site, and that's just what Trill does.
You ready for me to poo-poo this? The roles have reversed, Mike. You're optimistic. I'm going to poo-poo all over this thing. To me, it looks like a netbox, kind of like the Microtik netbox, sort of white, and I guess you mount it vertically the way the ports point down, you know, to keep rain out of it and stuff like that. I like how it's got a separate DC input on this thing. That's actually nice. The uplink, so it's a 5-port switch, really. 4 ports are gig, and then it's got one of the 2.5 gig ports. That's going to be the first thing I'm going to poo-poo, because I think 2.5 gig ports are stupid. You know, you've got 4 1-gig ports and then a 2.5 gig, so it's not actually going to be able to aggregate the full 4 gigs out of this thing. Why couldn't you just put an SFP plus cage on this thing so that we could do fiber into it, 10 gig, and then I could actually get use out of all of those 4 ports. Plus, I'm willing to bet an SFP plus interface costs just the same as putting that 2.5 gig interface in there, and an optic for a 10 gig from Fiber Store is what nowadays, like $20 or something for a 10 gig?
$34
for an SFP plus. I'm pretty sure I can afford that. So I would much rather have done that, right? That way I could have been fiber into this guy and DC into it, which would have been ideal. But really, I'm just not sold on the 2.5 gig thing. It's like, just throw a 10 gig optic in this for me, please. Anyway, to keep the poo-poo train going, It's got Trill built in, right? So Trill is kind of a, I guess, a spanning tree replacement. It's supposed to be, imagine OSPF, right? That automatically works. So it kind of dynamically finds neighbors and finds best path, only it's built for layer two, right? So you don't really have to do a lot of configuration. So to me, what this is doing is this is going to encourage guys to build big bridge networks poorly, right? Without a lot of forethought or planning in there. So people already do this and they're like, hey, we'll give you this cool thing that's going to add some redundancy in there. And theoretically, it could work. Trill, I thought, was dead. I heard the packet pushers interviewing one of the ITF guys, one of the champions of it. And he was like, yeah, it's dead. It's over.
They also say that BGP is dead. And I'm not sure.
I don't hear packet pushers saying it's dead. I hear Greg crapping all over it all the time. He theoretically hates it. But that, you know, it's like saying, man, I hate having to breathe air all the time. It's the dumbest thing ever, right? It's like it's required. It gets the job done. Everybody uses it. Build a bridge and get over it. No, I mean, that guy's a lot cooler than I am, but he lives in this other space where he can affect these big, wide, sweeping things. You know what I mean? He's got the ear of a lot of people. I'm just a regular Joe operator. I don't have that control, so I have to live in the world where we have BGP and OSPF and these things. Like, I've got to take the tools that are given to me now and make them work. So
I guess you could say that I'm kind of aspiring to be Greg, Greg Farrow.
Oh, okay, not, okay. Yeah.
Not Greg. In that when I complain, I want people to take me seriously.
yeah, he's got a lot of pull.
I complain a lot to vendors, and they typically don't care. But for some reason, they seem to take him a little more seriously. And it's much bigger vendors. It's like, you know, people the scale of Cisco and Juniper, you know, either one of those companies is the size of the entire WISP space, and you know, they're taking him more, you know, more seriously. Quick tangent, as I do want to come back to this a little bit, but on the, you know, me complaining to vendors thing. I did make a post on our Facebook about Fiber. You know, all the things that Fiber fixes for a WISP. The timing on that coincided with some Fiber Store orders that I placed. My Fiber Store rep emailed me saying, what are you doing? I see you've placed four orders to four different addresses across the country, and none of them are yours or anyone you've ordered to before. What's going on here? It's like, well, I reached a tipping point again where I was irritated about the lack of SFPs on radios on towers, and so I mailed them some. So I sent some out to a couple addresses for Ubiquiti. I sent one to Mimosa. I know they have one on the B11, but there's nothing else. The B5s don't have one yet, so got to remind them. So I'm actively soliciting. If anybody up there thinks they have a vendor that needs an SFP, let me know. And if I care about that vendor, I will send them an SFP as well.
Gotcha. I'm going to steal some words from one of our patrons, Casey, in the Slack channel. He said, so you can afford to send SFPs to random vendors, but you can't afford a new mic, huh?
Which prompted me asking about mics earlier.
Pretty classic. All right, let's bring it back to this IgniteNet switch. I feel like Trill in this configuration is going to encourage bad behavior, bad network design. I think it's a cool technology, but I just don't like the way it's implemented.
I think it'll have to be to like, I do think that, you know, going beyond the traditional OSPF type stuff that we're encouraging most WISPs go to, I do think that the next step above that is some more of these overlay technologies, be it Trill or SPB or VXLAN, EVPN, insert, I'm sure there's four or five new ones I don't even know about yet. That's issues that we have. But you have to be somebody that's already built a routed network, learned those lessons, and then learn how to handle the flat network. Or perhaps it's not flat all the way. Maybe it's just your backhauls that are flat. And, you make sure that you have routers at each tower to handle your access side. I do not encourage somebody who's just using one VLAN for everything right now to roll these out, because you're not responsible and you don't deserve to have that. Go find a consultant and fix your network. Now Greg's like, so we got him to stop bashing vendors. Now he's bashing the audience.
No. Man, everybody starts somewhere. I can't, because I've, every mistake everybody else has made, everybody listening, every mistake, I've made those. I've made those same mistakes, right? Everybody, we all start in the same places, a lot of times we do anyway.
It's started routed.
Did you? Well, yeah, I did too. But I'd been routing in like an ISP data center environment for years before I started doing that stuff. But like, I was doing work this week. I've done it twice now, for a guy who's got a big, nasty bridge network. I mean, it's so bizarre the way it's been configured. And he's had a couple of different people come in over time to time. So it's a patchwork of people doing just these most bizarrely bridge things. And he'll have he hit some amazing spanning tree errors. And so I was trying to do some crazy gymnastics to make it work. And then another, it's just one thing after another. It's just so unpredictable, and everything's gotten all weaved together, and it's just a big hot dumpster fire. We're working to untangle it all, but it's just such a nightmare. So the first thing, so if somebody's got a bridge, so if you're listening to this, folks, and you've got a bridge network, the very first thing I do before I ever want to touch your network, I say, build a diagram. Show me all of your towers. Show me where the public ISP space you have is going. Right? Because that's going to show us what we're going to have to do. I mean, a lot of these guys end up with a chunk or two of public addressing, whether they go to a data center and then get some off of those guys or get their own ASN. Anyway, they end up with a bunch of public IPs, and they'll have, say, 10 towers with a 1/24 going to all of those towers. So how do you start untangling all of this stuff, right? The only way to do that is to know all of these crazy little things you've been doing, and factor in some of these guys will also be doing transport for people on top of this. They'll be doing a mixture of private addressing, public addressing, and they'll be doing transport for people straight over this exact same network. And it just gets hairy. So if you don't know where everything goes, don't expect a consultant to be able to help you figure that out either. You got to be able to diagram all that stuff. And then, to be honest with you, once you figure out where everything goes, you'll probably see some logical steps you can take yourself to start undoing. Man, we went down a tangent I wasn't expecting, but I've talked to a couple of different guys on bridge networks, like complicatedly bridge networks lately, and it's just so frustrating. I just, they kill me. They kill me by inches when I have to deal with these bridge networks and they don't know where anything's at, right? Because it's been this weird conglomeration over time, and I need a mental picture of all the pieces of equipment connecting together, because obviously it's not done right, or you're having problems, so something in that chain isn't right, so they'll leave a piece out, and that drives me crazy, because then I'm fighting with something for a while. Or I was fighting with one for 45 minutes, and then it found out that they had a duplicate private IP address in the network to this thing I was supposed to be going. So it's like, oh my God, you know what I mean? It's like, I had chased my tail for a long time before I finally realized what was going on there. And then, oh man. So it's just diagram that stuff and get yourself cleaned up.
Or be prepared to spend a bunch of money.
Oh, don't do it that way. Don't do it that way.
We'll see. I picked up a client that there was no option. They had just fired the people that did their tech stuff. So there was there was like one or two field techs, a customer support person, and a billing person. And then like the CEO, who, he, you know, he touches tech, you know, from a distance, but, you know, he wouldn't know how to do any of that. And so basically it was, okay, fix this. Like, okay, well, do we know any SNMP communities? No.
Yeah.
Passwords.
You had to do a whole lot of server infrastructure, right? Not just network-wise.
Yeah. Like, you know, I'm still discovering some things. And I haven't logged into the Juniper yet because my IPs aren't allowed into the Juniper. They do have a voice infrastructure, like, you know, not just, you know, Asterix running, but, you know, they actually have, you know, soft switches and media gateways and things. And half of those are on somebody else's IP space. It's not even their IPs.
It's going to get tricky. How many subs do they have?
I don't even know. I have no idea how many subs they have.
How about a ballpark?
Hundreds. Hundreds of some kind.
Say 400 to 1,000, somewhere in that neighborhood?
Probably. Yeah, I mean, there's a, well, maybe even more than that, because they have, I think, a slash 21, and there's like a, you know, most of the IPs responds. Maybe they even have thousands. I don't know. Because I'm still trying to figure out how things are plugged into each other, much less how many devices are hanging off of the, you know, DSLAMs in this case, because they do DSL. But yeah, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, how this, you know, how the DSLAM is plugged into the switch, plugged into the routers, plugged into the. And I mean, I've probably got 200 hours in, and I'm still doing discovery. That's a lot of money when somebody has to walk in and reset passwords on things so that they can then discover what the network is.
Yeah It's I mean, I don't know, I can't fault anybody. You know, we all fall into these different situations at different times. It's just, man, documentation seems to be the thing that always lets go. I mean, you know, when you've got a limited amount of time, you can only spend it in certain areas, and oftentimes we're, you know, relegated to putting out fires or installing new customers, and so we just
sure
you know, we forget about the documentation piece, and that's fine until you have a problem, and then anybody who's going to assist you needs to know what it looks like, and even yourself, you need to know what it looks like. You need to, you know, is this thing taking the right route? Is this the right IP address? I don't know.
Yet, do as I say, don't do as I do, because I'm terrible at my own documentation. But yet, for this one, like, I'm being thorough. Like, you know, I'm setting up, like, I've got NetBox set up, and I'm, like, you know, mapping out all of the racks. You know, last time I was in one of the CEOs, I was, okay, you know, where does every cable that plugs into these things go to? And I just have just notepads just full of, you know, this device, module 1, port 3, goes to this device, module 7, port 6. There's pages and pages of that.
Sounds like you need to get a college student to come in and get some hours for you.
Well, but then it's like, but then, okay, so I have somebody else do it, but then do I trust that what they did is accurate? If then I then have to go, okay, so this is what we have, now I reconfigure it. And if it's not correct, then I reconfigure myself out of the network, and now I have the drive there and fix it.
Something somebody told me a long time ago is they said you can always get more money in some fashion or another. You can always hire more people. You can't buy more time. So spend your time wisely where you
I'm being paid to do it. So it's
not, I know, but think you could then, like, that grunt work, you could have somebody else do it for $10 an hour while you're actually spending your real brain power doing the important bits.
As I was talking in Slack a couple days ago, you know, doing this discovery of where these cables plug in now has me saying, okay, we need to rebuild this wiring infrastructure. So I'm looking at patch panels and, you know, how other people wire from front to rack to back to rack. And, you know, so at some point we should have to rewire everything because it's all just a mess. You know, they've got, I think it's like 100 pair, you know, telco cables that are gray. A bunch of those mixed in with gray Cat 5s for their infrastructure. So you can't actually, like, stuff gets lost when you're going through there because your cable goes behind, you know, 600 pair of cables and you don't know where it comes out.
Might be safer to abandon it in place, Mike.
And, Well, and there's some of that because I look at some of the ports and like there's no lights on. I'm like, so some of this doesn't even do anything, but I don't know what doesn't do anything. So actually, so we've got like six layers of tension at this point.
Let's roll it back 1.5 layers. You mentioned documentation. You're using the NetBox stuff, which is an open source project that lets you map data center racks, right? You can show the rack and then all the pieces of gear in the rack and then where they go. Who was it that was it the Packet Life guy that started that project?
I think it was DigitalOcean.
Okay.
Somebody from there, I think.
But I've heard really good things. I think some of the other guys, some of the other brothers use it. I don't know if they want to get called out for their use or not, but I think some other people. And then we've sort of been looking, doesn't it do IPAM as well?
Yeah. Yeah. And so like, you know, it'll do, you know, all your subnetting and things like that. I don't think it does any of like the real, that, you know, I don't think it does, like any of your, you know, DNS record generation that I've seen in some of the other IPAM solutions, but you know, it does, you know, it'll keep track of cross connects, the, you know, power cables, well, cables of any kind, you know, cop, you know, whether it's Ethernet, phone, T1, power, you know, AC, DC, you know, so on, you know, they'll keep track of all that stuff. And it had a concept for VMs, could be a server VM or it's, but it's just more like a module with inside of a module. So like if your server is a, or if your module is a physical server, then the VMs in it are VMs, but if your outer module is a DSLAM, then your VMs are the different blades.
I got you.
And then, you know, each of them has their own connections to things, and you know, or if it's a, you know, media gateway or, you know, whatever, you know, you can break up the individual cards, so that way you're tracking it down that far. You know, that part, you know, I really liked that, you know, that, and it, you know, it, you know, and then you can like color code by different types of devices. So then when you're looking at your rack overview, you know, these colors are servers, these colors are DSLAMs, these colors are switches, these colors are this. And so you can at a quick glance see, you know, how much of your rack is being filled up by what.
That's cool. I had, and this maybe is like a question for like Chuck Hogg type, you know, those guys doing fiber to the house, but I've got a project coming up pretty soon where I'm going to be doing management for a really big fiber plant, big OSP outdoor fiber plant. And I was curious if anybody had any experience with any commercial packages, like software packages that are designed to manage that, right? So I know they're going to have all the GIS information, they're going to know what the POPs are and the KMZ, but a piece of software, like collaborative software that we can use and the end customer can use both to document, you know, not just where the fiber actually lies, but also the splice cans. And when you open up those, you explode those splice cans, you can see like the trays and I guess just document what strands go where and, you know, all that stuff. Just, I think it's going to end up being, I don't know, several hundred miles of fiber. And so I think phase one is going to have like 71 different POPs. So it's just, it's going to get overwhelming if there's not something. I mean, it's phased, right? So this is early process and there's not a whole lot of fiber in the ground now, but this would be the time to find that package and use it. And I've just never done any of that stuff to that scale. I mean, I've always used Visio before and broke it out onto, you know, just individual pages. So like kind of this area and these cans, this is this page and the next page and the next page, but that's not really scalable and it's not very quick either. I'd like something that's maybe even web-based where you could just go into a web interface and then just hit drop down, something like that to make that easier. If anybody knows of anything, give me a shout. I'd love to hear it.
And we need to have some sort of concept of, you know, of the layering. You know, you could have, you know, not for yours specifically perhaps, but, you know, you could have a 4 or, you know, 8-inch duct, and then inside that duct you got multiple, you know, 1.5-inch conduits.
Yeah.
And each of those conduits has a little 7-millimeter micro duct. And then in that 7-millimeter micro duct, you've got a 288 count. That's that's comprised of a bunch of loose tubes. So then, you know, you've got 20 some odd loose tubes, and then each one of those loose tubes then has another dozen strand, you know, and you know, maybe you take one of those micro ducts, and that's Bob's, and it goes to Bob's, you know, Bob wholesales it from you, and it goes to all his pops and things.
Yeah. Well, or, I mean, the problem there too is sometimes it'll be in one of those vaults. You'll hit a splice tray, and I don't know if it's a 12 count going into that tray. You know, six are going to the left, and the other six are going to the right. And so you need to know, you know, like exactly which strands are going to who and what their purpose is. You know, just all that stuff.
If there's some sort of, you know, damage to the facility, be it, you know, you breaking something in the splice tray because you're an ox, or, you know, or a backhoe or something, you know, need a quick reference. Okay, these are all the customers that go through this point. You know, they need to be notified and, you know, kept up to date. Because you don't really want to tell people that aren't down that stuff is broken.
Yeah. That'd be a bonus for sure. All right.
Trill. Yeah. yeah. 10 gig ports. I agree. Especially with people making the 1 gig, 2.5 gig, 5 gig, 10 gig copper, modules that can go to SFP plus, just make it a 5-port SFP plus with Trill. And then let people just put in whatever module they need, be it single mode, not multi-mode, don't do that. Copper of various speeds. I think that'd be a lot more useful. But I think a lot of this stuff deals with just what chipsets are available. That was one of the problems. Ignite's devices, I forgot what it was, I asked him about it, and he's like, well, because it has 2.5 gig, because that's what the chipset has. Like,
it doesn't come with a chipset. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have a 10 gig port, so I can't put one on. All right, fair enough.
It's just, to me, it stands to reason there's going to be a whole lot more chipsets out there that have 10 gig interfaces than 2.5 gig. I mean, I would have to say it's probably at least 10-1.
Yeah, on the new stuff, though, like, you know, for 60 gigahertz phased array, whatever things, you know, they're probably coming with 2.5s because they're envisioning enterprise Wi-Fi. Who's adopting the 2.5? I mean, you know, I'm with you on the just go to SFP plus and call it a 10 gig and call it a day. But
yeah,
you know, guys are causing a mess.
I guess the idea on the mesh link having the 2.5 gig port is that you're going to go up to one of their radios that's got a 2.5 gig interface to backhaul it. So that's why it's got it on there. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, but then, you know, if you have more than one backhaul, that's okay. So now, you know, who gets the 2.5 and who gets stuck on the one?
We'll get it all figured out. I don't know.
You know, I mean, like, you know, cause I'm mostly seeing their praises, and so now they have something I can complain about, kind of taking advantage of that.
Do you have any idea what the street price on that thing's going to be?
They told me a ballpark at the show. I don't remember. It might be in one of the videos.
Okay.
It was not a lot.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, $500 or less. I don't know how much less.
That's not bad. It's not the worst thing I've ever heard of.
You know, I don't think there is any switches out there that have any sort of fabric, be it Trill, VXLAN, whatever, that are $500. Yeah. I mean, mostly because they're made for data centers and they're 48 ports, and so now they're a lot more expensive to start with. But
All right, let's move on to another piece of hardware: the Ubiquiti Amplify Teleport VPN router for travel. I saw you link that up. Ubiquiti, I guess, started a Kickstarter. Have they done Kickstarters before?
Not that I know of, but.
So I thought that was interesting.
Probably wasn't watching.
So this is if you've got an amplifier router at home, you take this little brick with you and you plug in an internet connection like at a hotel. So you're at the hotel no matter where you are, and it jumps in on the internet and I guess broadcasts your normal home Wi-Fi SSID and then creates some kind of a VPN back to your house. That way you can, you know, I guess they show it like if you live in the US and you're traveling to Europe, you can still watch your US Netflix and stuff like that. You can still get to resources that are only available inside of your network or region locked or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. And we can do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Joe Schmo has no concept of how they would do that. And so this fits. Or like, you know, if you're a road warrior for work, you know, you're just always always away from home. You know, that would be a nice way of handling that. And, for a long time, but most of the time I knew of this product existing, I thought people were just confused as to what it was. Because I'm like, there's no way that they just made one of these things with a VPN client on it. And they did. But I do think it's a reasonable product to have.
Oh, yeah. For your average Joe Schmo, basically nobody listening to this podcast, but normal people, the norms, muggles, it's going to make a lot of sense for them, right? They can just plug it in and a couple of clicks later and, you know, they're watching whatever resource, I guess, or changing the temperature on their thermostat at home or looking at their DVR at the house. I don't know, whatever.
Yet, it looks like, at least through Kickstarter, I don't know if that's any of their, you know, MSRP, but they're looking at $90 for the part that travels with you if you already have an Amplify setup.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
And that's, you know, that's a reasonable price.
Yeah.
For somebody that can't, you know, that doesn't carry with us, you know, doesn't just carry with them a MikroTik wireless router and has their own VPNs on it already.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about the Kickstarter angle. I was listening to, there's a podcast I listened to called Dubai Friday, which is three idiots that just, I mean, they're pretty funny. One of them is Max Temkin. He's the guy that basically owns and runs Cards Against Humanity. So he was, at one of his episodes, he was talking about how everything they do is through Kickstarter because it allows you to gauge what people want to buy and what they don't. You know what I mean? So you put it out there. If it's a good idea and it actually works, then people are going to throw money at it. And you know, all right, well, let's ramp up production. Let's do this thing. You know, if it flops, then, you know, you're not really out anything other than the concept work and just man hours. I guess you can really save yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, I was just thinking about that as I opened up the page. I was thinking, so Ubiquity now has a Kickstarter. Kickstarter is largely used to gauge if people want to buy something or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they get a good response, they build it. So why don't they take all of my ideas and put them up on Kickstarter? If people want rockets with SFPs or if they want air fibers with SFPs, they'll tell you on Kickstarter.
True story. I mean,
and it doesn't even involve engineering resources or anything. It's just, you know, some marketing guy just slapping something together in Photoshop or whatever says, you know, will you buy this? And if people, you know, step up to the plate, you know, then they can engage the engineering resources. Hey, people obviously want this.
Seems like they'd still have to do some ballpark work on the back end to get some costing to figure out how much it's going to cost them to do. And so, I mean, they're, I don't know, what would it cost them? Probably 15 grand of man hours to really put something like that together. If even that, I don't know, maybe 5 to 8 grand.
It does seem like that's the thing, is that, like, you know, if they're doing a retrofit type thing, you know, they have an existing product and they're trying to squeeze it in, you know, that, admittedly, that is a lot more expensive than you're making a new product. completely brand new, ground up. Say like the Air Fiber 5X HD that was just announced back in October. The cost to add the SFP to that would be nothing because you haven't built it yet. You haven't designed it yet. Everything's from scratch. No cost.
I'm a little pet there. There's got to be something. I mean, there's got to be something associated with that. Everything costs money, Mike.
The SFP cage costs less than the Ethernet header that they're putting on there now.
I don't know. Would guys think about it like this? If 50% of their market are guys that just throw up flat bridge networks, are those going to be the kind of guys that want to deal with SFP ports, or are they just going to want to plug in a regular Ethernet cable?
Well, see, but then those are the guys that aren't buying air fibers; they're using power beams to do their backhauls.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
So,
like, you'd be surprised.
You know, those guys that are already willing to spend a little more are buying the air fibers anyway. And I don't need to be harping on Ubiquiti solely because there's plenty of other people that are not doing it, but they're just the easy target.
Yeah. Everybody needs to listen to Mike, right? Everybody could gain some wisdom by listening to Mike for a few minutes. All right, let's move on to something else I've been kind of noodling over. I've been starting to look at kind of customer interface softwares. I've been sort of chewing my way through a list, building up. You know, it's like there's so many flavors, you know, so many genres of these things, right? It's like sometimes they have you install on-prem, you know, or it's hosted in the cloud. If it's hosted in the cloud, that's going to be kind of a monthly reoccurring cost, right? It's usually per sub that you're paying there. Or sometimes it's you install on site, but you still pay an annual license fee. And then sometimes it's a one-time on site install and you never pay again for it. There's all kinds of different weird things like that, right? But one of the ones I'm looking at right now that I just went through, put through some of the paces. I can't say I did a very super thorough job. I did iBill.io. I'm not sure if you guys have you ever heard of that one, Mike?
I have loaded the website for the first time now.
Oh, right. Well, it was new to me as well. You can actually sign up for a free account. I think they give you like up to 20 clients free, you know, on this thing. So it does it appears to do your reoccurring billing. It's very generic. And maybe it's just because it's really new, but it doesn't seem like it's very feature rich. It's not WISP specific, right? So it looks like they try to keep it as generic as possible to allow like VoIP providers, WISPs, maybe people doing DSL plant, maybe people doing all kinds of various things that just need Radius authentication. So it doesn't have a simple flow in setup. I think setup time to get my first client authenticated probably took, I don't know, 45 minutes, somewhere in that neighborhood. But it's not very intuitive. It doesn't seem very feature rich. There's like, you don't really have like clear ability to say boot clients. Whenever you're setting up Radius, it doesn't have Radius specific features for like MikroTik. So you can't put in like bandwidth limits for that customer and then it'll toss it back and create a simple queue for them, do things like that. I don't think I saw like framed routes or framed IP, although I think some of that functionality may be in there. So just, I don't know. It looks like it works out to be about 50 cents a sub. So it's not expensive. You know, for the reoccurring pricing ones, it's not super pricey, but it just didn't feel like it's there yet. It didn't feel like all the features. I mean, of course, being non-WISP centric, there's no attempt at like doing tower coverage stuff or, kind of anything that like, you know, if a customer calls in, you know, this is the subscriber area that I cover. There's no of those little kind of nice little widgets in there. It's really just sort of a back end, I'm going to collect payments for people system. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It is cheap. Splinks is another one that I've, you know, heard people talking about. Splinks actually might even be cheaper than this because you're free up to 100 subs versus what, 10 or 20, something like that.
Yeah. Well, I started looking at Splinks as well. honestly.
But then, you know, that's, oh no, okay, it's this free trial month, then it's $50 a, okay, yeah, so it's 50 cents a sub. You know, it seems to drop down. 1,000 subs, $400 compared to 1,000 subs, $400. So same pricing, so similar.
Yeah, it's
thing,
about 50 cents, you know. Yeah.
But, I mean, but so we're looking at, like, you know, 50, you know, 40, 50 cents a sub, obviously cheaper than a Power Code or a Sonar or whatever. But it's like half of the price. So, like, you're already halfway there. Is it worth it to you or not to pay twice as much to have something a little more suited for you? Maybe, maybe not. Depends upon, you know, what your goals are and, you know, resources and whatnot. But, you know, having more options never hurts.
Yeah, and I'm trying to look a little bit more into Splinks. I know I've heard a lot of people bitching about Sonar, how there's just missing pieces from it. I haven't delved into Sonar yet. I've just started looking at Splinks a little bit more. Splinks looks nice. I mean, it seems like it's more, it's far more intuitive. It doesn't just seem like it is. It's far more intuitive than the iBuild stuff. It seems to be a little bit more tailored towards Wisp market. Setting up customers' plans, things like that, is a lot more just straightforward. You know, it kind of makes sense there. I've also noticed that it looks like that one you host yourself, right? The Splink system, like a Red Hat, because it looks like you can do installs on these things for like different little packages. And I think you can write your own little packages that go in there. Cause I saw like there's a package for like buy cells that will pull in and I think provision SIM cards and stuff like, so there's a little kind of bit, but they aren't necessarily free, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily expensive either. It's just somebody else has gone through the trouble of writing this, coding this, they're using it for themselves. So they put it back up and then get a couple of ducats off of it, which I'm all for, man. You know, why reinvent the wheel? And it looks like it does the normal reoccurring billing Splinks does. It looks like it integrates with pretty much all of the pay systems, you know, Stripe, Authorize. Man, you can do PayPal on the thing if you want. You know, all of the bigs are on there. So it seems like it's got most of the features. It looks like it's got bandwidth limitation, things like that. Again, I haven't delved super deep into Splinks yet. I plan to. I've got it kind of in my crosshairs. But again, I'm going to keep asking people, give us thoughts on what you use and why you use it and what you think would be better for this or for that. Kind of, you know, just give us your experiences. You have any thoughts on that?
I wish I could be more useful on the Sonar feedback. Not a dig at them at all. You know, I was all, you know, go. Like, I was beating down on the clients faster, get me migrated over from Wismon. And then my new client came up, you know, that, and I've been, you know, putting out fires and whatnot on their network. So I haven't even talked to Sonar.
You chump. You know, on Splinks, one thing I noticed, I think it doesn't automatically bill customers. I think what you have to do is like select all customers who have invoices and like click a button that says, you know, charge them or something. I don't think it's scheduled
weird
in there. You might be able to just schedule that, but I think that's what I saw on the interface.
It's weird, but I don't know. I haven't looked at any of those other ones.
So what's the story on the CBRS thing you put in here?
That's the 3550 to 3650 being new spectrum for US WISPs. I think we talked about it last show or the show before. Talk about it again because it's kind of an important thing. Basically, the FCC had set up so that, you know, it was an auction style that, you know, people like WISPs or utilities or private users could then affordably purchase licenses. And the cell guys are trying to hijack it, and they got the FCC's ear enough to at least open up for comments. basically trying to increase the license area from a census tract, which has like 8,000 people, to what they call a partial economic area, which in my area, I would have to cover what I cover right now at a minimum. I would need to buy licenses that cover approximately 10 million people.
Wow.
As
so you're basically saying it's mere mortals couldn't afford that.
Yeah. And the only reason they did, you know, why the cell guys are after that is because they want to kick us out. You know, we're not going to be there bidding against them. You know, because we can't afford to buy one for the entire Chicago area. But if I'm serving just a subdivision, or I mean, I'm just targeting one subdivision for this rollout, I could just buy the licenses for that subdivision, or approximately. So I could probably cost justify outbidding Verizon on Spectrum for that subdivision, because that could be worth $10,000 to me to get a license. And they're trying to cover the entire country, so multiply that out, they probably couldn't afford that. So that's why they tried to force the license area to be so large. FCC is open for comments on it, I believe through the end of the month or beginning of next. Look in the show notes for some help that WISP is providing. Put your comments in there saying how you'll use that spectrum and whatnot. It's mostly LTE gear. I can go there now, but once it's, you know, once it's opened up for actual use, which was planned to be, I think, this spring, I expect a lot more gear will support it.
Yeah, I think I was in kind of like a web conference meeting thing for BuySells a couple of days ago, and they said that they have some equipment that's already like pre-planned for the CBRS stuff as soon as it opens up. So they're optimistic, you know, they're building towards it.
Yeah, and like, you know, most of the new stuff, like, you know, most of the new LTE gear, it'll probably just be like a firmware upgrade just to roll your existing products into supporting that. I could see the Cambium PMP 450 that's in 365 would probably be able to support that through some sort of, you know, back end. But nothing else that's out there now is going to support that. You know, none of the MicroTik stuff will. None of the Ubiquiti stuff will. Because
that's because that stuff's like off the shelf chipsets, right?
Yeah. You can get that stuff in 365, but it's not.
I mean, can't you take a standard chipset and do like some kung fu with it where you modulate it up after it actually comes out of the chip or something?
Yeah, because that's how the Air Max 365 stuff was it was just down, you know, it was just frequency converted down from 5 gig to 365. That's why a 5 gig rocket can interfere with a 5 gig rocket, because they're talking 5 gig natively. Now, you know, next version, you know, probably wouldn't be as bad because all the Air Prism stuff, that technology is basically just taking 5 gig, down converting it to a lower frequency, where then they put on their fancy filter, and then they convert it back up to 5 gig again. So they could probably do that better on some of the new stuff, but, you know, like the older, like the MicroTik stuff and the older Ubiquiti Air Max 365 stuff, just doesn't have the horsepower to do something like that. So, and I don't know if Ubiquiti's going to make something new there or not.
So tell me what the story is on this six wind thing.
Well, I was hoping that we could hear some from some of our guests, or not guests, audience, if anybody else has worked with this, because they have some pretty bold claims. But I do believe I've heard of other people licensing six winds technology for use in their products. I mean, going through here, you know, looking at, you know, this is for an x86 environment. They're looking at 12 million packets per second per core for IP forwarding.
12 gigabits per core of IPsec. That's insane.
Yeah, standard hardware support, handles a million routes, so on and so forth.
100,000 tunnels on Intel servers.
This is technology that other people are already licensing for use in their products. And apparently they have an independent router, because this is like the email I got with some promotion extending, trying to steal people away from Viata, basically, since AT&T owns it now and they expect it's going to die.
Hmm.
Has anybody used that? Those are some those are awesome routing benchmarks. But what does it do? Does it do BGP? What are its capabilities? I have no idea.
Yeah, we are pleased to extend our Brocade V router replacement campaign into 2018 while increasing our offer to include Viata OS users.
And so it's like, it has awesome specs for running on the standard x86 gear. Should blow anything we've got today out of the water.
It's using Intel's DPDK. I bet Thrift. Andrew Thrift knows all about this. He's got the skinny on this. We'll just need to ask him about it.
He probably used it 2 years ago.
He probably figured out it was crap. He's like, forget that. And just moved on.
So yes, that's a call for action. Somebody's, or for other people that, someone out there, go ahead and buy it and then tell us what you think.
Or let's email SixWin. Maybe they'll give us some free stuff.
Yeah, maybe. That's why somebody. I think they advertise on Packet Pushers. Maybe we can even advertise over here.
Yeah, right. All right, Mikey. We've hit the hour mark. You ready to put a fork in it?
Yeah, I think I'm supposed to start cooking dinner here shortly, so.
Yeah, get off your ass. All right. Mike Hammett, if people want to contact you out on the internet, how do they go about that, good sir?
I'm available via almost every social media platform. Just look for me.
All right. If you guys want to get a hold of me, you can find me at gregsoul.com. I got a little contact form you can fill out. If you're old school and you want to get a hold of all of us here, you can do that via contact us at thebrotherswisp.com if you're an email old schooler. If you're a new schooler, you can hit us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/thebrotherswisp. All that good content that's popping out, that's Mike. He stays on top of that, answering your comments. Also, if you direct message, that's going to hit Mikey. He's going to hit that and disseminate that information.
Not too new school, because like the new school is like Snapchat and stuff. And that's,
I don't think anybody wants to see a Snapchat from us. That's not where it's going.
I'm surprised how many adults are doing that. I thought Snapchat was just for kids to send each other pictures of their junk, and
it still is for sure.
Now tons of adults are using it now. Weird.
Gotcha. Let's see, if you are so inclined, we have a Patreon as well. It's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. I think we're up to about 8. What I really like are the guys that become patrons and then jump into our Slack. We've got a special Slack just for these guys. Casey, calling you out again, man. Chatty Cathy over there. I love that. I love that interaction. I love having people in there.
Yeah, earlier this week he was saying that how you in Southern Texas has gotten snow and he in Canada has not.
The world's upside down, man. What can I say? Next thing you know, I'm going to grow hair back. It'll be great. So if you guys have any questions or comments, we love talking about those on here. I mean, we only think about what we think about. I mean, we're chatting back and forth all the time, but you guys actually are running into problems that maybe we've run into and surmounted ages ago, and so we don't ever think about it. So pop that in there. But then again, maybe it's something we've never even contemplated, and I love that even more. I love finding out new things. So definitely drop us a line. If you have any constructive criticism, they're not complaints, constructive criticism, pop that in there too, man. I want to hear about it. So from all of us here, all of you guys out there, thank you much.
Thank you.
Bye.